あ、はじめまして、青山です、応援よろしくお願いします。
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, the 14th of April. This is show number 53, and I am your host, Bob Hayes, and I am joined again by Jim Race from Ride On 2. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Howdy, you guys. Can't read me, can you?
No, it's last show went real well, so we want to do it again. Before we get into the show, I do want to mention that this episode of MotoGPOD is sponsored by Komodo Gear. Komodo Motorcycle Gear is the result of the passion and combined efforts of motorcycle enthusiasts that have used their collective experience and applied it to their products. They race, they ride, and they cruise. So for more information, call 888-KOMODO-G or visit www.komodogear.com. They're the evolution in protective wear. And we did hear back from Rodney Mazin, our winner from the Komodo contest that we had. And he's working with Wayne Wilder over there at Komodo. And he's going to be picking out a set of Mizo leathers. It's kind of cool. He's exchanged a few emails with Rodney. Didn't get a chance to actually call him. We couldn't quite make the times line up. But he's going to be getting back into racing in some WIRA events, apparently. And so he's going to be doing quite a few track days and everything to try to get up to race pace.
Cool. You know, I really wanted the chance to say, and so what has he won, Bob?
Oh, geez. We could redo it.
No, that's perfect.
Okay.
Well then.
So he has won his choice of a racing suit. And that's, like I said, I've said it before, I said it again, thank you very much to Komodo for all their support and everything. That was a great contest. I think, you don't see that kind of prize on you know, television shows and things like that are much larger budget than a podcast. So it was kind of cool and we really appreciate that.
Thank you, Komodo.
Yep.
Cool.
So, what's been going on this past week in MotoGP and motorcycle racing in general, Jim? Because to be honest with you, I found it to be a somewhat slow news week. Although we did talk to Liam, which unfortunately you weren't there on that conversation, but it was a lot of fun. I'm going to play that later.
You let me sneak in the back door and listen to some of that, and thank you very much. The week after big races is something that things kind of hunker down, and you know, if a series is going for 3 weeks, a series got some time off for 2 weeks, you may not hear a lot out, but it's not like things are quiet, nothing's going on. You poke your nose around here and there and you might find something. I guess the biggest news and kind of a sad thing that Frankie Keeley, unfortunately, high-sided at the recent WSBK practice, and not a tender young gentleman, although tough as nails, and it's been obvious for his racing over the years, but unfortunately broke a couple of ribs and broke his pelvis. I haven't heard anything more medically since yesterday, but he has a long, long, long illustrious career as sort of the factory privateer, if you will. He has his championship that he won, I believe it was in 125s, back in 85, but he's been around, he's been in the mix, he's won some races, and frankly, he's a guy that I don't like to see down. So, Frankie, if you happen to be listening out there, or any of Frankie's supporters, here's to you. Get healthy, get well, and we'd love to see you out there again.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, I mean, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, but I'm a Frankie fan as well. He didn't, unfortunately, lately in World Superbike, he hasn't been getting a whole lot of camera time because he hasn't been right up front, but it wasn't too long ago that you used to see a lot of him, and even now he's always out there, and he's a super racer, and as dedicated as his equipment will let him be, and it's sad to see. And at his age, he's because he's over 40.
Hey, wait.
yeah, but not to make any jokes about the broken pelvises and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, that's a serious injury, and it's probably going to take him a long time to recover, and I'm wondering, you know, who knows? I don't know if we're going to see him come back or not. What do you think about that one, Jim?
I think without a doubt we'll see him come back. I think his not even his passion, but his life is motorcycle road racing, and he'll give it a shot, I'm sure. I think he races for his fans and for himself. This is what he does. He's welcome back anytime. I'd love to see him out. And whether or not he does well, I will follow him and be a fan of his for an awful long time.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely a class act, too. So, well, I hope you're right. Yep. I hope he does come back. So,
What else is going on? Let me see. Any outfalls from Cutter? Hasn't been a lot of news on that front, as far as I've heard. You did have a good conversation with Liam, and he'll bring up some things in that. I haven't heard anything new from Cutter. Have you?
No, I haven't really. And much that else came out after it. There was the some testing afterwards, and Yamaha did some testing there.
We mentioned, you know what, we didn't actually mention on Monday's show that Melandri was fastest, and I capped on Melandri on Monday because I was saying that he was my personal underperformer of the year, and I should have mentioned, because I knew it then and it hadn't stuck in my head, that he was the fastest guy on Sunday practice. So cheers to you, Marco. Not putting you out, but come back and show us what you got.
Exactly. Yeah, that is true. And other than that, I don't know if a lot of the teams got a lot of the problems that they've been facing sorted out or not. You know, Yamaha with their famous vibration chatter problem, they're still trying to eliminate
vibration it. Chatter. I like that.
Exactly. They're vibration chattering vibration. And it's just
vibrato.
Yes, exactly. Well, they seem to be, you know, everybody's bound and determined not to call it chatter, but then every now and then they do, and who knows what they're, so whatever, they're having the problem.
I think it's
it.
Fine. They just don't want to sound very Honda-like. I think everybody's taking the opportunity to have, you know, this extra time off to, I mean, think about the tracks that we've run at so far this year. We did Jerez, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did Cutter, and there are two tracks that are pretty much, they're not diametrically opposed, but they're quite different.
Right, they're very different, yeah.
We're coming up on the next race at the end of this month in Istanbul, Turkey.
Yes.
And that is yet another track. It's probably more like Cutter, but a lot more elevation changes. And depending on the weather, we'll have to see. So they've got a fair amount of time to deal with all their stuff. And meanwhile, there's plenty of other racing going on.
Right, and it is also Easter, and I'm sure the schedules were arranged around that. It's just kind of convenient that there's no racing this weekend. So,
well, not convenient for us fans.
Not convenient at all, no. I really prefer to have it, you know, more spaced out. I'm trying to figure out what the temperature was last year in Turkey, because the race, both the Qatar race and Istanbul, were right at the end of the season last year in October. And
very true.
The Qatar race definitely made a huge difference on temperature. Let's see. Yeah,
well, to the point of where we almost ended up with sandstorms and rain as opposed to searing heat. So,
right, exactly. They seem to.
I'm not sure what the riders would have wanted more. Frankly, I think there wasn't a whole lot of sand on the track, at least for the GP. It's my understanding that, you know, it was a little bit worse in the morning. The rain, though, was kind of unexpected. But I watched or saw a couple of pictures of Rossi getting his back pad filled with fluids. And I was like, you know, you're going to need that in this weather, because I believe the temperature, at least in Fahrenheit, was somewhere in the high 80s, which isn't that hot.
But it's a dry heat. And, that's what they say. But yeah, it was in that kind of range, I do believe. Now, last year in Turkey, it was that's a much milder climate, their weather. So,
it was, if I remember correctly, it was green in October. So I'm sure it's going to be green in the end of April.
Right, exactly. And like I said on our last conversation, that's one of my out of the new super tracks, that's my favorite of the big super tracks.
It's way cool, and there's no doubt that the riders like it too.
Right.
Yeah, it's a for being a F1 design track, I think it's a track that's also well designed for the mm-hmm. riders. And I've watching the onboard lap from there just makes me want to chuckle and get out there myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I'm not a huge fan of like Sepang, although Sepang has a little of everything and stuff. It's to me that's the more of the Formula One-y kind of thing, and Shanghai to an extent as well. you know, they can race anywhere and I'll watch it and it's always good. But, you know, you do have some tracks that are better than others. Sure. Also, another interesting thing about Istanbul is one of the counterclockwise tracks. So, which are, not that rare. What do you got? Probably three or four, but...
Three or four, yeah.
Somewhere.
I don't know why that is. There is no doubt that there are racers that are happier turning right than turning left or vice versa. All the guys in the top tier don't care which way they turn as long as they turn it fast.
Right. And on the well-designed road course is going to have an almost equal number of right and left turns or, you know, I mean, at least a good balance. It's not like it's noble.
Sure. So,
you know. Okay, well,
what else we got to talk about? Let me see. Coming up in, 8 days now from now? We've got both AMA and World Superbike.
Yes, that's on the weekend of the 21st, 22nd, 23rd kind of thing.
Yep. So World Superbike's going to be in Valencia.
Mm-hmm. AMA will be in Barber.
And the beautiful Barber course. Mm-hmm. AMA, this will be the second race out.
Right.
They had a huge break in between. Not a whole lot to talk about. You know, DIS, I guess it's been, over a month? Month and a half?
Yeah.
Seems like forever.
It has been a while, yeah.
And frankly, the race at Daytona, for some reason to me at least, doesn't seem like part of the season. It seems like sort of a preseason game.
Exactly, an exhibition game.
Exhibition game. Yeah. And so I think the whole real season starts. So we will look from good things from the usual people. There's been some testing going on. In fact, there was some testing today down in Fontana at California Speedway, and kind of a weird thing went on down there. One of the crew folk apparently had some heart condition in the middle of it. The teams were out. There was Yoshimura Suzuki and apparently just Miguel Duhamel from American Honda, and they had a break for an hour or so. So that was kind of odd.
Yeah.
And then World Superbike coming up.
Right. World Superbike after their own huge break, because they had their first two races is quite early, and then they just had it's been 6 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
More than that. And
forever.
And they're testing in the middle of that, which was odd. Let's start the season, then have some testing. And unfortunately, that means Keeley's probably going to be missing most of it this season.
Very true. Very true. So we're kind of in a bit of a fog here, waiting for some news is what's going on. But definitely coming up, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Once we get into the busy part of the season, our heads will start to spin as well as those guys as they travel from continent to continent, state to state, and wherever to wherever. So obviously we're going to have some more news coming up, and I'll try and feed Bob, and Bob will give it to you.
Yep. Actually, as a matter of fact, speaking of that, I've mentioned this a few times. I've got my work, biggest trade show of the year coming up, and I'll be gone away from home for, I don't know, a week and a half and everything. So Jim is going to do the next couple of podcasts, and that's part of the reason why we sort of did these together ones, kind of, you know, bring him in. I knew that Jim knew stuff about motorcycles, and I knew that he could talk. And so
the only two requirements for a podcast. There you go.
Exactly.
What are you people waiting for?
As long as you know something about something and you have a microphone, you can make a podcast. But actually, you don't even have to know anything about anything. I've heard a few podcasts that are...
As long as you read it on the internet, it must be true. So just say it loud and say it proud.
That's always my motto. So, well, why don't we go ahead and play the Liam interview, or not so much interview, but a phone call, catch up. It was a long one. Liam also is another guy who can talk, and Liam is super interesting, and so is Jim. But
I just happen to be based here in the States, and Liam is everywhere all over the world.
Right. So, you know, how can you not admire a guy that sells all of his stuff pretty much, and what he has left, he sort of stashes at friends' houses and everything, and moves to Spain to try to get a job as a MotoGP mechanic, you know, more or less almost on a whim, this whole thing was, if you talk to Liam about it. It's really super. So I like sharing his experience. He's always got some good stories. He's always got some interesting little tidbits that he just sort of rattles off as though everybody knows them. And I'm kind of like, wait, I didn't know that.
Hello, on the inside, no. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, no, we us mortals don't know that. Please give us some information.
All right, well, Liam is going to give us some information right now.
All right, I've got Liam Schubert on the phone. Liam is our guy in Spain. He just got back from Qatar, where he was there over the MotoGP weekend, and he was working for the Losail National Cup for the Dantin team. Right, Liam?
Yes, that's correct.
All righty. And Liam, now you're in Barcelona right now?
Yes, I'm back in Barcelona. Got back, actually got a little bit sick, so it took me a day or two to get back up on my feet, but now I'm back mobile again and trying to figure out what's the next race that I'm going to attend.
Cool. So what are you doing right now today?
Well, I went for a walk with a friend, got a phone call and arranged to have dinner with my friend, 250 KTM GP Hiro Aoyama.
Wow, that's
so we're
cool.
We're sitting in the restaurant Tremonti, 1980, on the famous Diagonal Avenue, and looking in front of me, I see Rossi's helmet, Lorenzo's helmet, Ramboni's helmet, an ancient Sete helmet, an old Alex Trivier helmet, an Elias helmet. I mean, this is a motorcycle restaurant. We've got pictures on the wall from a guy named Gutierrez, Navarro, race pictures of Alberto Puig, Agostini, all the heavies that have been racing through Spain and Italy have been in attendance at this Italian restaurant, and it's just amazing seeing the history on the wall, signs, you know, pictures, autographs. It's great. This is a nice place, so I recommend it to anybody that's in the area.
Yeah, well, no kidding. If they go to Spain, I mean, that's kind of cool stuff that we just do not get over here. You could probably find a NASCAR restaurant or two, but no MotoGP restaurant.
Right, that's what I'm thinking of, except instead of being like a NASCAR restaurant, this is a little bit more old school, old world. I mean, waiters are wearing vests with bow ties and have the little mustache, and it's definitely got a little bit more mafioso flavor. I guess that's the way to put it, but great place, good food. And as you can tell, the people get a little loud.
Cool.
Yeah, nice place. So anyway, I'm sitting down here with Hiro. We're just talking about bikes and riders and how the Qatar went and having fun. So I guess I'll get into a little bit about Qatar. Man, what a windy race.
It sure
believe the weather conditions.
Yeah, I
Go
saw
ahead,
the.
Bob.
I saw the you know the with the red flag at the start of the race, and I mean it was just blowing out there. It looked like a sailboat. So I could see the there was a lot of wind going on. Do you think that affected the racing that day a lot?
Well, I think it did in the morning. It was so windy in the morning that it definitely blew a lot of sand onto the track overnight, and you could see in the conditions that. The first 2 days, practice on Thursday and Friday, the weather was actually pretty cold, and I expected it to rain, and it did drizzle on one of the nights. So, you know, they're trying to set up for a desert race, and yet it's so cold. So I think they had a difficult time setting up on Thursday and Friday with the changing conditions. Between Thursday and Friday, there was only one bright, sunny session, and that was the last session on Friday, which was qualifying for MotoGP. So I think they lucked out on that. And then Saturday rolled around, race day, and we get up, everybody comes outside, and it is blustery. 40-mile-an-hour winds. I couldn't believe it. You just looked around and said, they're going to hold a race in this? Like, oh, my God, the little guys are going to be blown all over the track. And with the way, you know, how much these bikes weigh, you expect everybody to get blown around the track. It was pretty wild.
Yeah, and sorry, one thing we noticed was Jim Race and I were talking, and he pointed out that it didn't look like any of the fairings had the holes drilled in them. Was that just because the windy conditions were unexpected, or do you think that people are finding that it wasn't the right situation to do that in that case, or what was the reason for that?
Well, I've heard different things about that, specifically in the time that I've spent with the World Superbike. You'll notice, for instance, the Ducati 999s that are running in World Superbike only have two holes in the fairing for the air induction system rather than the four that you see on the production bike, on the production fairings. And when I questioned some riders about this, they said, oh, yeah, with the four holes, it goes, you know, it goes great, but it just doesn't feel quite as stable at speed. So we tape up the other fairing holes, or we just get new glass without the fairing holes in it, and it just seems to perform better. And you'll find the same thing if you look at the AMA Ducatis. I don't know if their reasons are the same, but there's differences, and maybe something like that happened in Qatar. I do know that there were some different fairing shapes. One thing for sure, the new bike that Nicky Hayden's riding has a radically different front fairing shape. And because of the color scheme, the paint, you can't really tell unless you're up close. The mouth of the air induction system is different. It has different body fasteners on it. They're in different locations compared to the old bodywork. Safe to say, especially with all the internet rumors that are going around about it using the 800 bottom end and just different, a completely different chassis, it's safe to say it's a different bike.
So, yeah, quite considerably different, and that's explaining some of the reasons why some of the riders seem to be having a tough time sort of adopting to it then?
Yeah, I can't really say whether or not certain riders are going to like it more than others because, you know, I don't know exactly what Nicky's being asked to develop. He could just, for all I know, be running laps to see if the new motor's going to blow up. I mean, obviously Suzuki's having problems, and it's kind of sad for me to see because after such a strong preseason testing, to have so many engine failures, over a race weekend is really disappointing for the guys. I definitely felt for John Hopkins when he was angry at his bike, and I thought, oh man, you know, that's horrible, horrible. So hopefully they get that problem worked out, and you know, maybe Honda's hedging their bets, saying, okay, we know Nicky can ride the 05 fast. Here's the 06. Ride it hard and fast. It's supposed to be better, and we just want to see if it pops.
Right.
But, you know, knowing Honda, they've probably had that motor on the bench, you know, running up and down on a dyno for, you know, 2 months straight to see if anything would happen. So chances are that motor's going to be fine.
Now, speaking, well, I want to get back to Suzuki and John Hopkins real quick, but speaking of Nicky Hayden and that RC211V, did you, I don't know if you happened to actually see it when you were there or if you heard about it, but there was a practice start where he did a start and the bike just
I
went
saw
up.
It. I saw both of them. Holy smokes. The only way I can describe it is if you watch the movie Faster and you see Max Biaggi bring it up down this main straight and it's like wobbling sideways, that's what it looked like. And he was in the middle of two other riders when he did this. Three of them did a practice start. The other two took off. He went up. The bike went straight up in the air at 12 o'clock, maybe even more than 12 o'clock, wobbled side to side, and I'm not sure how he saved it, those amazing dirt track skills, but he brought it back down, karanged himself, and then, like, pulled around the final corner where I was, where I'd seen it, and then gave me a little wave and went back in the pits.
Gave you a wave.
Just amazing he managed to save it.
Huh.
And definitely it was a fluke. And I think he reported in a short interview either on Soup or some internet website that he has a button. It's not full traction control, but he has a button to help him with that, and it just didn't kick in. So it was a wild and woolly start. I also saw a start from Tony Elias, practice start, and the front wheel just got off the ground maybe 2 inches. It was fast. That's all I could say.
Huh.
It was a really good experience for me because I managed to get my work done for the Losai National Cup, which conveniently finished on Friday. So I had most of Saturday to just do final maintenance on the bikes, change oil, radiator fluids, make sure everything was prepped for the next season. And on Saturday, I had more time to be free and move around, and I didn't take any pictures on Saturday because, for me, race day is all about racing. It's not about, you know, trying to get photographs in the corner. I just want to be out there and enjoy it, since that's why I was there. But I did manage to get through the pits, talk with Kenny Roberts and King Kenny, and we joked about how Kenny Jr. had set the provisional pole and the new circuit record on Thursday and kind of shocked everybody, and then how 10 people had gotten in front of him or 9 people had gotten in front of him the next day. And he's like, as fast as we seem to get, everybody else seems to get faster. But we concluded that at least they were in the game and moving forward. So I don't know what their new chassis is going to be like at Le Mans, but they're working hard and they're real pumped.
Yeah.
They're real pumped.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, they had a respectable weekend. You know, I'm sure everybody was hoping for a little bit more. They always are. But I think that it still turned out pretty good.
Well, here's a neat thing. I managed to be there in the evening when they did the night riding, the three, Caparossi, Rossi, and Kenny Roberts Jr. and had a chance to sit down with Kenny Jr. for a few minutes after that. And, you know, I took a picture of him in his new suit at night, because I thought, oh, you know, how often do you see a world-level racer, you know, in his suit at nighttime?
Right.
And he said that despite, you know, whether or not they had enough lighting or not, which they definitely do need more lighting, you know, everybody's going to be up against the same problems, meaning, you know, if it's dark, everyone's fighting the same dark, the same way everyone rides the same track. So that was kind of neat. And I thought, wow, what a cool satellite photo that would make to see a whole track lit up at night. You know, kind of like the Great Wall from Satellite, but sure. A racetrack in the middle of the desert.
Sure, Google Earth.
I think that would be outstanding.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Outstanding. Yeah.
Might be a, you know, a good race to watch. I mean, we've seen endurance racing where they're racing at night, and it's sort of spooky. And what you're seeing through the camera is actually quite a bit. You know, you're gathering more light, and they've adjusted the camera, so it's quite a bit different than what you're actually seeing in real life down there. Those I'm sure those dark patches are quite dark, huh? So, I mean, overall, it was a spectacular race. It was a real nail biter from start to finish. Hayden gave Rossi just a hell of a run. I actually thought he was going to win it there for a little while in the middle of the race. I don't know if you got that feeling too. Yeah,
that's the feeling I got. I definitely think he's stepping it up a level. Every time he speaks in an interview, and it might be a little rough on himself. I mean, his performance is showing that, you know, this is 6 podiums in a row, and he's starting to become more of a contender. And, the restaurant's telling me to get off the phone.
Oh, really?
Bob, you want to continue this phone call later?
If you got to be off the phone, that's cool. So, all righty, we're back with Liam.
So now I'm in a nice little lounge. It's quiet. And we can talk about Qatar. Man, what a race. I think Nicky Hayden's really showing that he's in it to get up there and fight, not just, you know, settle for a safe third because he might have crashed out the last race or something like that. I mean, he proved at Valencia last year he wanted to run up front, and then again in Jerez he was really up there. And this time in Qatar, I mean, who else goes toe-to-toe with the doctor and trades that many positions that many times and doesn't fade out by the end of the race?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I couldn't remember a time when he had passed for the lead on Rossi. You know, I mean, he obviously led against Rossi the entire time at Laguna Seca last year, but I'm not sure that he's actually passed him for the lead up till now. Not that I can remember, at least.
Yeah, I've never seen that happen. So the fact that lap 6 was so exciting, and then again at lap 19, I've thought that maybe somebody wrote that he maybe showed his hand a little too early, but you just can't take any chances with the doctor in any event. I mean, if you were going to hope, oh, I really hope I get a last lap pass on him, I don't think the doctor, it works that way against the doctor. I think if you have a chance to get him, take it and run.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's the way to do it.
Because you know that when he gets his chance and he wants to check out, he goes.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So I think good on Nicky for really, really staying up there and you know, sticking to his guns. He didn't falter under any pressure from Caparossi. I mean, he tried to stay with the doctor even though he may have said they had the bike that could win, well, it could be the bike that could win in Turkey or Le Mans. I mean, so I really hope this is a signal of greater, stronger things to come from him and his team.
Right. I think it's a signal for the season as a whole. I mean, we're just showing, you know, the depth of the field and the fact that the some of the teams, you're getting a little bit of compression. You know, that Honda and Yamaha don't seem to be quite so far up ahead of Ducati and even Kawasaki. And, you know, so it's just sort of compressing that. And then with, like I say, everybody's such a talented rider out there. So, I mean, we're going to see some good stuff. And I think we're going to see some shakeups on guys on the podium to an extent. Do you think that the Bridgestones, while we're talking about Ducatis, which we were just a second ago, he actually did a little bit better than I had initially anticipated. But I think that that Qatar, those conditions and everything may not have suited those Bridgestones all that well. Is that kind of, would you agree with that?
Well, traditionally Bridgestones have always been the hot weather track tires. Really hot tracks, they do great. This Qatar wasn't very hot, you know, it was maybe 80 degrees Celsius or 80 degrees Fahrenheit, but really windy. And I think after the testing they showed in Spain in the preseason, the Herta test specifically, it was so cold there, they showed they had cold weather tires. And then at Jerez race, they showed they had, you know, normal temperature tires. So I think Bridgestone's really made done a lot of homework, and I think they're prepared for this season. I think when you mentioned about the compression of Honda and Yamaha, what we're seeing is maybe there's not a ton of money that's been put into the development of the 06 bike in the same way that Suzuki has obviously invested and built a new engine, and Kawasaki has obviously improved, and Bridgestone has improved. But maybe Honda and Yamaha are waiting for the 800s. There's more development money into that. And hoping that the quality of your riders and their 05 teams are going to pull them through the 06 season. So that might be one reason why we're seeing other teams running up closer to the Honda and the Yamaha. Despite Nicky having the, you know, the obvious 06 or the 06.5, as I call it, with the different fairings and motor. I think it's interesting if someone said that if it is true that he's using the bottom end of the 07 engine, that, you know, that clearly means they're using a five-cylinder.
Right.
And it won't be doing something radical unless it is just a pneumatic-type valve setup to get more RPM in the future. I think Suzuki, something must have changed for them to have that many engine failures in one weekend, maybe a supplier change or something's out of tolerance. Because they went through so much preseason testing without a rash like that, that it's got to be up.
Right. Now, were all the failures, do we know if anything about the failures, if they were all similar, or were they just all over the map?
I don't know. I've read different things online, and I didn't really talk to anybody in person about it. I ran into the Suzuki crew on Friday night, some of them, at a nightclub, just in the early evening, not like we were partying late, and they seemed to be in good spirits, so I don't know what type of pressure they're feeling or if they were just at the nightclub because they had a lot of tension to get out of their system. But, yeah, I feel definitely bad for them. I'm speaking about it with Hiro tonight when we discussed the frustration of John Hopkins, you know, the video frustration. He said, oh, maybe John doesn't ride next race. So, definitely, I think maybe there'll be some hurt feelings back home at the Suzuki factory over that.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. It's hard to judge sometimes how the factories are going to respond to something like that. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. And I to a certain extent, I almost think people are making a bit of a mountain out of a molehill on that whole thing. We've seen riders, you know, pound the tank in frustration and, you know, the usual sort of things like that. And saying that it Hopkins was specifically kicking at the Suzuki logo like everybody's saying, I don't know, maybe I just didn't see that. I just saw him, you know, he was wailed on the bike, what, by three or four times tops and stomped off, basically, you know. So he's 23 years old and gets upset, you know.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I mean, it's a passion sport, a passion industry, and when you're upset, you're upset.
Right.
And, you know, obviously sponsors don't like to see that type of thing, but, you know, it's race conditions, and the races bring out everything, and it heightens everything to such an extent that, yeah, when you're upset, I can see that happening.
Right, right.
Hopefully it won't have any negative repercussions in the future for him.
Hopefully not. And, I mean, to a certain extent, I think I'd rather see somebody get mad that their engine gave out on them and frustrated than just the sort of hang it up and walk away, shrug, like, oh, well, you know, just another day.
Yeah,
you know?
that to me, that shows a competitive spirit.
Right.
And a fire inside.
Yeah. I noticed about Hayden, back to Hayden real quick. He's got some new A-Stars boots that just look huge. They're like so much bigger than his leg. And I had a guy ask me a question. Unfortunately, I don't have the email in front of me. And he's like, you know, what's up with that? And I looked at him, and he's right. They're just enormous. Got any theories on that? Are there some new European model or something?
Well, it's possible. They do test drive the new stuff with the riders. I mean, Alex Hoffman is riding a set of Puma boots that Chris Johnham put a photo up in one of his Road Racer heads of the Puma boots that Alex Hoffman's using, and I've never seen any of those around. Look like moon boots. I do know that Nicky's got some custom painted gear. I mean, he was running the camouflage boots with the gray camouflage at Jerez, and this time it was more of an olive drab camouflage on his boots here in Qatar. So I think it's just part of it could be the white looks a lot bigger. I haven't really taken a close look. I did get a photo myself of Hayden turning right and dragging the brake lever on the bike on the ground, and it's sparking.
Oh, man.
So if you check my thread on BARF, you'll be able to see the sparking brake lever. And I thought that was just a touch unusual, because normally on these bikes, parts don't drag. If anything, it would be a toe slider or something on someone's boot that might drag and spark, but an actual brake lever is something else.
Right, kind of weird. Huh, yeah, I was actually trying to wade through your thread, and it's just, you know, you got so many pictures up there, and there's so many posts that it takes a long time to catch up every time I go up there and take
yeah.
a look. But it's always good, so I do enjoy it. We'll post another link to that on the site again today.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a really good time at Qatar. Let's see, Friday watching the practices and just talking with people, talking with Chuck and Kenny. I just really want to emphasize to people that if they want to go watch races and they do have a small vacation budget, go to the far-off races. I mean, it's one thing to experience 130,000 people at Jerez or Valencia, the big packed-out Spanish races or Italian races, but unless you have some kind of crazy connection or some way to get in, you're going to be just another, you know, sweating body out there watching the race on the outside. Whereas if you can get to one of these far-off races, it's so much more of an intimate personal experience. It was awesome at Qatar.
Now, Jan, you were there. You were there on both. You were there on both the World Superbike and the MotoGP weekends. How would you compare the two as far as the whole meal deal, attendance, setup, just everything?
Let's see. Attendance, I think, was probably about the same, to be honest with you.
Really?
Which meant pretty light. Not too many. I don't know if it's because there's not many motorsports fans in Qatar or what, but I don't think ticket prices are an issue, because there's a lot of money in that place. I think there's a lot more glamour in the MotoGP world. That's the word I'm going to stick with for now. And seeing, it's good for me, because I got to see the 125 and the 250 teams out there, which they don't go to Laguna Seca, so I think people really miss out on a lot in that respect, because these machines are so different than anything we've ever seen race. You know, it's been years since we had a 250 GP with the AMA, and I think the level of these bikes might be a little higher than what was run in AMA, honestly. And there was just so much action going on. And at the same time, there was no action. I mean, I went to lunch on a Thursday or a Friday, and I just decided, well, I'm going to take a short walk before I go back to my job, because we had some time to play with. And I'm standing there, and I see, oh, okay, there's Kenny Jr., so I'm speaking with him a little bit, and then Chuck Axel walks out, so I'm speaking with him, and then Randy Mamola rolls up, and so he joins the group, and then Kenny Ray Abrams shows up and he joins the group, and then John Hopkins rolls over, and the next thing you know, probably 7 out of the 10 Americans that were there total are in one little group just talking about Ducati and Marlboro. And you know, that to me, that's unbelievable. You got, wow, we're all here, wasn't by plan or you know, just totally. And
right.
That is not going to happen at any other race.
Right, simply
maybe
because
China.
More crowded. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, maybe China. Plus, on the flyaway races, they can't bring their hospitality trucks, so people don't hole up in their hospitality truck or their camper home. Well, you know, so there's a little bit more chance for contact and interaction with people. I think both series are very professional, but speaking with the radio control people from the Qatar track that run all the radios for the different teams and set up everything for the television feeds, like radio back and forth between that. They said the Superbike setup was a lot cleaner and easier to deal with than the MotoGP one.
Really?
It was just too complicated, yeah. And they don't, well, the problem is that at the track, they don't have a lot of bandwidth to play with as far as frequencies. So in GP, they want lots of frequencies, but in Superbike, it's a little more streamlined.
Interesting. That's a really interesting observation there, too.
Yeah, so on just a logistical standpoint, I'd say that GP is a lot more complicated, whereas
yeah.
Superbike's out there, and it's race, race, race.
Yeah, well, you got
that's
more
really
money
GP
at stake.
It's about race, race, race.
Yeah.
I think having direct factory involvement in GP changes things a little bit, especially for the teams and the racers. And a couple people mentioned to me I don't want to name names, but they were telling me that sponsorship is becoming the dominant force in GP, or has been for the last several years, and that they can say, all right, this is the rider we want, and this is the kind of bike you're going to have, and they dictate everything. So they were saying that Superbike's a little bit more free in what they're able to do and who they want to ride and the type of bike and team they want to have, whereas in GP, the sponsor really dictates quite a bit. So that's another difference that some team members had mentioned to me.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of apparent. And the comparison of MotoGP and like Formula One and stuff is easy to make for that. You know, where it's being driven more and more just by simple dollars. It's unfortunate. It's just a fact of life, I think.
Another interesting thing that I picked up on is I think that the factories might all be running two factory bikes and two satellite bikes next year.
Oh, yeah?
Meaning that Suzuki might be running four bikes and Kawasaki might be running four bikes, and that would be a natural time for a change to happen when they go to the 800s. So hopefully that will help flush out the grid.
And yes.
I don't think they'll be pushing other factories out, you know, small teams like Kenny Roberts or, you know, a team like WCM, I don't think would have too much of a problem. But I think it's a good idea to have more bikes represented on the grid.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just for the health of the sport. Yeah.
Now, where do you think the teams themselves would come from if we're going to add teams, assuming that's how it would work out? Because I'm trying to think of all the satellite
teams.
Well,
there are a couple teams right now that are kind of waiting in the wings. Cito Pons is obviously one example, and WCM's another example. And I'm sure there are a couple other teams in different series or even 250 teams that are ready to step up to that level. I'm sure a team like BQR could step up because they have a really strong base in Barcelona and a strong team. They run in the Spanish Championship, the World Endurance. They've got a 250 team with two riders. So they have a nice system set up. Dantin, I'm sure, could take a satellite team. I don't know if he'll stay with Ducati, for example. And there's just a lot of things going on right now, especially with the supposed talk of selling Dorna, which is looking like it's going to happen. Just lots of action.
Yeah.
Kind of tough to keep track of.
Yeah, it's...
And all I'm looking for is a job on a team.
That's right. Well...
Randy joked to me that if I could pay my own way, I'm sure that I could join Team KR, but I can't pay my own way.
So you want a job and you want to get paid.
Yeah, good to see them with a sponsor, Drink Phantom. So everybody, find out where Phantom is sold and buy some. Because, I don't know, whenever I see something that supports a race type industry or a rider or something, then I generally like to support that.
I agree. I'm all over that. I always do that. Now, that's Phantom, Phantom, the normal Phantom?
Yes, like an evil phantom that chases
right.
you in a haunted house.
Right. And
which I don't know if that's a good idea for an energy drink to be called that, but
right.
hey, it's there.
I think I've seen it. I'm looking for their website right now, the second while we talk.
Okay.
Drinkphantom.com?
I think the 250 race was also great. The 250 race was also really good. It was my first chance to hang out with Hero since the races. I was like, man, that's a good result. That's two good results you've had in 2 weeks. And I think when you were testing in February that you couldn't have expected two in the top 10 with the bike after we had spoken. And he was like, yes, I'm very happy with the results and very pleased. And one thing he was telling me is that when you're on a smaller team that's as committed and dedicated as the KTM is, they have a very rapid response to changes. And this is something I'm picking up with the various teams that I've had contact with and some in World Superbike and some in the GP world. When a rider says, hey, I think this could be improved or this works, but I think it could work better, you know, and is gracious in the way he explains what he's looking for, KTM's able to really change things quickly. They'll probably have a new chassis by the Turkey race. In the same way that Team KR is able to rapidly respond to changes that Kenny Jr. wants, KTM can also do that in 250. So, whereas I think on the larger teams, if a rider says, hey, I'd like to change this, the larger team would say, we tried that last year, and it didn't work.
Right.
Or the rider at that point didn't like it, so that's ruled out. We can now mark that off the list of possible changes. So... Another interesting conversation that came up with me and someone else at the track was who directs where the direction of the bike comes from. And this comes from reading Valentino's book when he was describing where he wanted to go, how much he thought Jeremy Burgess and him could dictate where the bike development would go. Like, I want this to change, let's change this first, and then move about changing that. And so he says where the parts are going to come from, like what type of parts he wants, whereas I think on other teams, they just show up with parts and say, try this, try A or B, and whichever one works better, we're going to run with that.
Right.
And then if the rider wants, say, part number C, they say, no, we don't have that, try A or B first, and maybe we'll show up with something else at the next race. You never know.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating, and I definitely think that after spending as much time as I have, in the last 6 months I've been to quite a few events and quite a lot of contact with people, there's a lot of politics involved, and it's such a delicate balance. I probably crossed the line at some point, just unknowingly. I honestly don't know.
Yeah. Well, whenever you have, you know, like you say, there are a lot of politics involved, and whenever you have it's a clubbish, you know, atmosphere, small groups, you know, and you're the outsider, you, Liam, coming in, you know, that sort of thing, and you're probably going to run into that sort of a situation. And then whenever there's money involved, there's going to be politics involved too. And MotoGP is all about money. So,
Here's another interesting aspect is the fact that in Europe, Americans aren't really, you know, graciously accepted, and this is due to our own politics in the U.S. You know, how many people in Europe love George Bush? I could probably count them on my hand, but don't quote me on that. Or you, I don't know.
Just quoted yourself.
Radio program for everybody. Yeah. I think, and this comes from working with the Spanish kids I've been with and spending some time with some Italians. You know, when you say you're American, that comes with so much extra weight. You know, maybe they've looked at us their whole life as, oh, these are the huge consumers in the U.S., and these are the people that just go around pushing other countries around or doing whatever they want to do. There's a huge stigma against Americans as being these pretentious, you know, overbearing people that just, you know, stuff their ideas down other people's throats. So when I come in and I say, hey, I'm an American, da-da-da-da-da, they're like, oh, you're American? And already that's a huge black mark, I think, in a lot of ways. You don't grow up in the European system and the European style of doing things, which means don't talk to certain people or don't look people in the eye. There's differences that I just have a really difficult time explaining without offending people. And I think it's something that you have to spend time out here to really get a handle on.
Right.
It's one of the strange things.
Yeah, I think that's true too. But you're picking all that stuff up now, right? I mean, you're.
Well, since I got here, actually, I picked up on it. The problem is my enthusiasm gets too much. I think I watched the race video yesterday, and I saw I put up a large American flag, and if you watch the first turn, I mean the first lap, you'll see it briefly as they're coming through the final corner onto the main straight. You'll see it, and after the race, they show me, like, waving the flag, running out on the track, congratulating Nicky Hayden. And he pulled over and shook my hand, and that was really good. That was the first time I'd had a chance to leap over a wall and jump onto the track, which, try that in the States. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, this is one thing people told me about the United States, about the Laguna Seca race, that we go all over the world, and in the land of the free, you know, the United States, it's the most locked down, regulated race that we've ever been to. And this comes as far as, like, just driving into the circuit to park the car before we go to work in the morning to, you know, the problems we have going out at night, so many differences being in the United States, or getting a speeding ticket for going 2 miles an hour over the limit, you know, just the rules are different in the U.S., and I think that there was some grumbling because of the outside of the track things that were going on rather than the track itself.
Yeah, some of the grumbling's going to go away this year, and some of it might actually get worse. I think that Laguna Seca and Scramp are doing wonders to work with the local authorities and all that for fixing that. But I think that some of the hotel stuff is still not just—it's not going away. The problems.
I agree.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, depending on my own work situation, I may be coming back. So who knows? Maybe people will have an opportunity to speak with me in person. But it's looking like if I'm not working, I'll be putting the rest of my money towards making a trip back to California, because that is one race that I don't want to miss.
Yeah,
of the tracks I've been to and the people that I've spoken with. You know, certain people's favorite tracks. One of the favorites that keeps coming up is Phillip Island, and that the track disappears when there's no racing going on. That you'll see a flock of sheep just wandering across a hill, and if you get up closer to them, you notice that half of them are on the racetrack, just in the rolling hills. And then when the racing's on, it's amazing, the water views. So I definitely, you know, at one point in my life, really want to get to Phillip Island and soak that all in. The Istanbul Turkey Circuit is another favorite that a lot of people have. The big races, like Mugello or any of the Spanish races, are always perennial favorites because I think riders really feed off of the crowd. And for me, Laguna Seca is a really special race also. And some people that I've spoken to told me that, yeah, you know, when you look at the facilities, they're a little primitive in comparison to the newer tracks, but there's a special ambiance at Laguna Seca that just permeates. And I think last year there was a ton of excitement coming from all the teams that, yeah, maybe they didn't have, you know, a big building and hospitality, you know, like a giant cafeteria, hospitality area, or, you know, any of the structures that are set up at the newer tracks like China or wherever. But just Laguna Seca has its own vibe, being near the ocean, and I think the U.S. fans really put out a huge welcome to everybody. A fantastic race. I can't wait to try and go back to it.
Yeah, I am.
If I'm not working.
Yeah.
I know that you might be deployed. Is that correct?
Yeah, I doubt I'll be able to go. I actually will be in country still at that time. I'll be in Mississippi, and I'm going to ask for that weekend off, but I think it's probably going to be
I think you should call in sick.
I don't know
if you can call in sick in the military in advance, but, oh, I would do whatever I could.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to ask.
One of your relatives should schedule a wedding for that time or something, just coincide it.
There's a good idea. They don't have to know that nobody's getting married. Yeah, exactly. So Uncle Liam's getting married. Cousin Liam.
But, Cousin Liam.
Cousin Liam. Yeah. Well,
I had a good talk with Earl Hayden.
Oh, yeah?
I think his father, he was there at the track. And when we were at the trophy presentation, and I was talking about Nicky's performance, and he said, you know, I just really wanted to hear the U.S. anthem. And I joked to him, I said, you just wanted another ride on the back of that bike. So we had a good chuckle about that. And gracious man. If you're up in Owensboro, Kentucky, go buy a used car from him.
Yeah. So Owensboro, Kentucky, and yeah. And he goes to pretty much all the GPs, doesn't he?
I'm not sure. This is the first time I'd actually seen him since Laguna Seca and spoken with him. Generally, when I'm at a GP, I'm trying to work with somebody or spending time with a team, watching them, because for me, my education comes from just being and watching things. And I don't get a chance to freewheel as much as I want. But Qatar was a special case for me because my championship, the Lasai National Cup, finished on Friday. So after finishing up with my people on Friday, I had some free time on Saturday, and that really gave me, you know, a chance to talk with people and just really relax and enjoy a race. So all the photos that I've posted on BARF, and I have many more to post because I think I took about 4 gigabytes of pictures.
Oh, wow.
That was all from Thursday and Friday, and on Saturday during the race, like, the cameras go away, and I just reverted to being a fan. Like, I love the racing, and I love the machines, and just to hear them streak by and roar, it's just one of the highlights, you know, in my life experience. I really love being a part of that. And I had Danny Pedrosa comment to me after the race. He's like, you were in the last corner, weren't you? And I said, well, how'd you know? And he's like, well, I could see you with your shirt off, waving it above your head. And he was, you know, laughing about this because there's no crazy fans in Qatar, and two, there's no fans that are going to be in the desert with their shirt off, you know, waving their shirt above their head when the riders go by.
Right.
So if anybody thinks that you know, he doesn't have as much of a personality as, say, Rossi, he has one. It's just a little more reserved, and he's a private person. And I think that comes from growing up in Spain. You know, we've gone to a nightclub together before with a group of people, and the poor kid just has no privacy. And hasn't for most of his teenage years, and now he just doesn't have any privacy. So I think he really guards himself a lot, and You know, he just tries to remain focused on his job.
Right, so just quiet and reserved rather than a
right.
than a robot or
you
anything
know, but when
like
you
that.
Get him, you get him around his close friends, his private people. He's a, you know, an open, nice person.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's a great kid, and he's gonna. I think he's gonna do real well too. So it's always
yeah. That's a, that's one thing we should touch on. We've now had two races where we've been able to see the four rookies show what they can do, and my goodness, what a performance!
Oh yeah. Stoner. Stoner was just amazing. I'm you know, he's. I can't say enough about how well Stoner did and how impressed I was with that performance. And Pedrosa did very, very well too. It wasn't quite the jaw dropping shocker that Jerez was, but you know, it's certainly there. It's a very, very powerful group of new talent coming up from the 250s this year.
Right. So, I want to emphasize that Stoner really put out after missing preseason and then arriving to Qatar, having slept in the Dubai airport overnight, you know, at an airport,
right.
and then arriving to the track directly at 8 o'clock and going to work on Thursday and immediately setting fast times, and then bringing his flu bug with him. I think he really put in a dominating performance, and I think if he was healthy, we might have had a different result. One thing I noticed through taking pictures is that... and just being there, everybody was pretty controlled coming out of the last turn onto the main straight, you know, concentrating on maximizing traction. There were wheelies, you know, small wheelies everywhere, and just people blasting down the track. But Stoner was the only guy that was breaking the rear loose and having it wiggle as he busted out of the last corner. And I thought, oh, the kid's riding a little wild, a little crazy, you know, my style. And it was just great to see him throwing down, you know, solid lap times over and over. And... great, just fantastic.
Right.
I got to spend some time with the Grassini crew, you know, to reconnect and just warm wishes and talk about my plans and you know, everybody wishing everybody luck. And those are a really good group of guys. I really consider them to be friends of mine at the racetrack and off the racetrack as well. And I looked at some of the timesheets. Whenever they have a free practice or a qualifying practice, they have all the timesheets with every rider's times per lap, and it's nothing you can get on the website. I mean, it breaks it down like, okay, rider went out for five laps. On the sixth lap, he pitted. On
right.
the seventh lap, eighth lap, you can see what the times are like, and then you can also see the splits. And then they compare the splits between all the riders and, you know, who's fastest through, you know, section one or section four. And for me, just reading through the informational packets that the teams get was also very informative and good for me.
Cool.
And,
so more detailed information than you're going to get. Well, I hate to kind of cut it down, Liam, but we're running out of time here, and I'm actually
okay.
doing this, taking a little time off my day job, and I got to pay the bills, so I'm going to have to wrap things up. Well, what we should do is catch up again maybe next week and kind of continue.
All right, next week sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Definitely, we've got 3 weeks until the next race, so
right.
we'll connect again. And everybody, thanks for listening to MotoGPOD and Bob Hayes.
Thank you, Liam. All right, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Okay, take care, everybody. Keep riding. Bye.
Okay, well, that was interesting. Liam's always a good and very interesting phone call, and I have to call him during the day when I'm at work. And I now have an office mate. So on that second part of the call there where I had to call Liam back after he got booted out of the – or not booted out of the restaurant but asked to hang up. On that second part, my office mate was in there with me and being very quiet because I kind of said, well, I can go work over here in our film storage room, you know, basically a big closet. And but whatever. So it was great talking to Liam. I enjoy that a lot and hope you guys did too. And thanks very much for being on the show, Jim.
Totally cool. The only thing we don't know is what they had for lunch. So
that's
next
true.
Time, probing questions.
That's right. You got to find out what they're having because, when they're in a place, you know, a fairly fancy restaurant in Spain having dinner. And at
filled
the normal
with,
Spanish
filled
dinner
filled with
time.
Motorcycle pictures. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And also at like 9:30 at night, you know, I mean, you wouldn't dream of having dinner any earlier than that. They were probably in the very beginnings of the rush. But in any event... that's going to do it for today. Like I said, the show was sponsored by Komodo, and thanks again to Komodo, and thank you very much to Jim, and thank you to Liam, and I will see, or actually I will talk to you guys in a couple of weeks, because Jim is going to do the next couple of shows, and that's kind of about it.
You never know. I might get Liam to do it while you're gone.
There you go. You could try that. So,
All right. Have a good night, Bob, and have a good time.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Good night, guys.
Oh, geez, got the tape in there backwards here. One more time.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.